Hey, I'm Curtis Jones. I'm just here presenting for Cesar. He couldn't make it. I guess this is kind of a change of pace from the talks before, but this is just some work that Cesar, along with Bill McGill and Jimmy Williams, has sort of started a long time ago, and I joined on relatively recently, so just wanted to document some of the work that recently, you know, got more to the completion stages. So, so we're presenting like a microbial denitrification model, which is of interest because N2O is like a potent greenhouse gas, and it's, you know, predominantly contributed through agricultural soils, where you see like a larger increase in the concentration following increase in fertilizer application rates and manure production after like the 50s. And there's a lot of management drivers or land use drivers that can impact it, particularly fertilizer application, but also tillage and anything that impacts soil water cycling or irrigation. So modeling tools can be useful for understanding these relationships and quantifying the impact of different management options or land use changes at different scales and applications. So basically just going to go over the new model that we put into the EPIC, the new denitrification model that we put into the EPIC terrestrial ecosystems model. And then go through like a few different model evaluation and application and intercomparison work that we've done or participated in. Basically this is like a general description of the EPIC model. The acronym originally stood for Erosion Productivity Impact Calculator and then changed to Environmental Policy Integrated Climate Model. So it's sort of like a cropping systems model, but it has more of an emphasis on management processes as they relate to, you know, soils and environment. And it has sort of a generic crop growth or plant growth model that can handle lots of different crop types. So yeah, you can model annual crops or perennial crops, grasslands or deciduous or evergreen trees. So it's functional for looking at crop rotations. You can do intercropping, things like that. And so it looks at lots of different management features, tillage, fertilization, irrigation, and things like that, and can provide you with a complete carbon balance, water balance, phosphorus and nitrogen balances. So a lot of different things in case, depending on what you're looking for. So here's a general schematic of the model that we put into place. So essentially, it starts with the energy source for the denitrification process. We are modeling sort of the carbon and nitrogen cycling using a sensory-based approach. The decomposition of soil organic matter or through root respiration from the crop will be providing available electrons to the process. The denitrification process can occur if electrons are available to proceed, as long as they're not all of them accepted by available oxygen. So if there are electrons available to the nitrate species, then those will be uptaken competitively through Michaelis-Menten kinetics, if that can't accept all of the available electrons, then it back limits the amount of decomposition that was occurring. All of the gases are allocated between the liquid and gaseous phase according to a fixed law, they can be transported between soil layers, solving the gas transport equations numerically, and also can transport in the liquid phase just through water flows. Also, if the partial pressures in a particular layer exceed the atmospheric pressure, then bubbling can occur and they can go directly from deeper layers to the surface. So applying this model, we wanted to look at like a few different applications to see like do model testing and evaluation. So first we looked at a study that was done with some partners at Michigan State University in southwestern Michigan at Kellogg Biological Station on a forest soil. They did an N-rate study applying like 0 to 225 kilograms of N per hectare, applied as urea granules that they mixed down to 10 centimeters pre-planting. So they're growing corn crops in both 2007 and 2008 under these treatments. And so here we're looking at, they measured the N2O fluxes using chambers at least every 2 weeks, and also tactically to try to capture the seasonal cumulative emissions. So here we're looking at daily N2O fluxes for 2007 and 2008 versus the N rate. And then here we'll be looking at the cumulative fluxes. And the responses are pretty much similar, where the red dots are the measurements and the blue dots are our modeled values. And we're generally capturing the magnitudes reasonably well, but the response is very much linear as opposed to like more of an exponential response that you can see clearly in the 2007 year. In the 2008 year, it's a little bit less clear. But there's but that's sort of a trend that we're missing. If you look at it, this is sort of zeroing in, looking at two of the rates. This is the zero in the fertilizer rate, and this is the 135 rate. So we can look at some of like the spatiotemporal responses, where you can see precipitation and the measured and simulated N2O fluxes versus time. And then down here we can see versus depth and versus time for water content. N2O in the gaseous and liquid phases, and then stocks of nitrate and oxygen. And so you can see really we are capturing sort of the timing and magnitude of the fluxes reasonably well, like nothing happening during the early and late season where the temperatures are low. The fertilizer application pre-plant, you start seeing kicking in the elevated nitrate concentration, and so we see our peak fluxes happening following these concentrated precipitation events that lower the oxygen content and increase the water content temporarily, coinciding with the more concentration of nitrogen in the soil. And then when you get like big precipitation events late in the season, when the soils are cooler and the water and the nitrate is no longer available, then we're not seeing those fluxes. Some of the, you know, the model seems to be performing like fairly reasonably in those senses. So that was just looking at one specific location in order to do some improved characterization of some of the model parameters and a broader evaluation of model performance. We wanted to use additional experiments, so we took advantage of we had a project that was focused on Great Plains states, so we were focusing on some of the GraceNet database through USDA that had some experiments in those states. Here you can just see we did, just for the procedure, we just used like some simple sensitivity analysis to identify some of the more versus less influential parameters, and conducted some model calibration and evaluation. And so, we end up getting like an R-squared of around 0.5, which feels fairly reasonable in terms of N2O, which can be hard to get good fits for. But see an overall general trend where we're getting under predictions at the elevated peak flux rates and over predictions at the lower peak flux rates. And this is sort of a problem that we'll see in the next evaluation, where we did a focus on dairy production systems as part of a model linear comparison project. So we are working with the groups that were also using the DNDC and the Descent models, which are two pretty widely used models for looking at N2O and methane fluxes from these systems. And for this context, we're looking at two studies that were done through University of Wisconsin. One in Arlington and one in Marshfield. They, in addition to chamber fluxes of N2O, they're also measuring some soil water and soil temperature, but mostly in this more superficial measurements, so like 0 to 10, 10 to 20 centimeter range. And essentially with all three models, we see the same under-prediction at the higher peak fluxes as a common problem across models, despite differences in the methodologies of the models. And over here, this is sort of like we're looking at regressions of the three models and then the ensemble, looking at the relationship between the N2O fluxes and soil temperature, soil water, respiration, ammonium denitrification, and nitrate, and essentially just showing like we're not seeing any like we're seeing that the models are fairly reasonably predicting the soil temperature and soil water, but the models have different ways are deviating fairly widely in how they predict some of these other covariates, but we don't have any observations of these other things, so we can't directly explain why some of these model differences are happening or where which model is right and where which model is wrong. So sort of just overall emphasizing, I think there's utility to the model intercomparison process, but we could use, you know, some more expansive studies and where we are coordinating some of these efforts with some targeted experimental endeavors. Overall, just mostly just wanted to present this new microbial denitrification model. It's a fairly complicated model, so it offers some like advantages in being fairly different from some of the widely used models that have maybe more simplistic approaches, but can also present challenges for larger scale applications, and you need a fairly reasonable data sometimes to characterize some of the components reasonably well. But we're seeing, you know, we can model the system responses, especially like the seasonal patterns fairly well. But in terms of the EPIC model we're demonstrating, and I think this is a common thing to some of the different denitrification models, the inability to capture these, the expected response to N rates, which would be important because fertilizer is so so key to these types of responses, and then also this sort of model-wide issue with the underestimating of the peak fluxes. So we're seeing biases that are limiting sort of the applicability or utility of some of these tools. So.